Hello and welcome to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports news. I'm Norris Howard, your lead host for today. I'm joined by the fellows out in the UNLV studios, Daniel Agbuya, Jacob Brothers. We're going to be bringing you some hot news. So let's get right into it. Thomas College, a school out in Waterville, Maine, has come out and said that they will not be carrying CSGO in the upcoming semester, citing, quote, in a tweet, CS is the kind of no-fly zone in collegiate. Hard to see nuanced strategy in a game that outwardly looks to be exclusively about bombing, terrorism, and gun violence. It doesn't lend itself well to the academic space. Rainbow Six fills that void for us. It with its more visible strategic elements. So I want to bring the guys in the studio in on this discussion and ask them, do you think this is a good stance? And on top of that, how can they say that about CSGO and then also still carry Rainbow Six? So how do you guys feel about this decision from Thomas College?
You want me to take a point on this one?
You can start, yeah.
I'm sure Thomas College is a fine institution. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to doubt anything about their academics or stuff like that. But I do think that they are misguided. It's true that, yes, it is about guns. It is about things. But so is Rainbow Six. So I don't know. What I'm not understanding here is that the disconnect here is that this has been known for years. CSGO has been like this for years. Why suddenly are they afraid to have this featured in their esports scene? To me, this is just a response to the current like backlash against video games that's currently there, which happens every generation, and it's just short-sighted. I think it's a short-sighted solution to a long-term problem.
Yeah, I think this is a very stupid decision.
Not missing words, are you?
No. Well, because it's like them doing this is pretending that video games cause violence, right? So they're like, oh, they shoot guns. Good thing they don't shoot guns in Rainbow Six, and and it's like, it's for them to talk about the strategy when it's a pretty strategically heavy game, Counter-Strike.
Mm-hmm.
To look at one of the most popular esports besides League of Legends and Dota, and it's like, no, this isn't really that big in collegiate.
It's absolutely one of the biggest games in collegiate.
Here's the thing, though, is that what I really don't understand about it, beyond just the concept that Rainbow Six also still has guns and gunplay in it, is the simple fact that they're citing, you know, bombing and terrorism. And I think those are the key words that they're getting caught up on, as well as, you know, just how the gunplay is played out over the course of a round or two. I understand what they're saying about Rainbow Six and how it has more strategic elements. But at the same time, I think CSGO has lived this long as an esport precisely because it is a strategic esport, precisely because managing that economy, understanding positioning, understanding where your teammates are is incredibly complex. And I think this is also a very knee-jerk reaction, not just to the conversation about guns, the conversation about esports, but also the conversation about any violent video games. And I agree with you, Daniel, that this seems very short-sighted. It seems like they're not looking at the full picture here.
And for Thomas College, for them being hung up on terrorism, it's like if they looked at Sonic and they're like, wait, Sonic's in this game? Like, in Counter-Strike, where it is the terrorists versus the counter-terrorists,
yes,
there's terrorists in the game.
Yes.
And the point is to put a bomb down. And I mean, even in Rainbow Six, you could shoot a hostage right in the face if you really want to. And that's also not good.
But that's apparently fine.
That's apparently fine, you know, as long as it doesn't say the word that people are now suddenly afraid of, it's all good to go.
Well, and again, I think you're right. I think this is all terminology. I think they're caught up on, you know, certain things actually being spelled out very explicitly in the game. But the basis of the game, CSGO, is no different from the basis of the game of, you know, Rainbow Six. And I think this is a question, though, that colleges will have to begin to ask themselves about, you know, are violent games appropriate for our program? But I think you have to apply that across the board. It has to be something that you are always thinking about and always dealing with in an even way. There's no way you can see CSGO and have Rainbow Six and then argue that you're doing some sort of benevolent thing by not having violent video games. But as high school esports continues to grow, college esports continues to grow, this conversation and this question will be brought up much more in the future. We're going to have to talk about this more, but we're going to move on. We're going to move on to another story, and that is Street Fighter V and Rocket League are going to be opening up the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Now, this is a sponsored event coming from Intel and the International Olympic Committee. This is not a medal event, but this is still a very big event. So, Jacob, you know, let us know what's going on with
and by Jacob, he means Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel. Yeah, this is Daniel's story.
So how it's going to work is we have a $500,000 prize pool, which is going to be split between the two games, between Rocket League and Street Fighter. Now, I'm going to start off with Street Fighter. It's going to be 12 national teams that are already in for the qualifiers. People can come in for the online, online, see if they can qualify for the team. Outside of the 12 nations, you have an online qualifier for people to join in. Those 12 teams will come into Japan near the finals, and they will compete for the final 8 spots. Well, actually, final 7 spots, because Japan, as the host team, will have a guaranteed spot in the top 8. Now, it's going to be a, from what I can tell, it's probably going to be a round double elimination event, like typical fighting game tournaments. Now, with the Rocket League, it's going to be 16 best teams. 16 best teams, and then at the qualifiers in July 20th, at the finals at July 22nd to the 24th, it's going to be a final 7 spots. So this is big because, you know, all this time people are talking about, hey, can we add esports to the Olympics? And this is not going to be, this is not it, but this could be the route it goes to sort of be accepted by the Olympic Committee, because this is the Olympic Committee.
Question from the crowd.
Yes, Jacob.
So are there going to be full bracket resets in this? Because we talked about that for the Overwatch League, how it's not, but fighting games usually have a full bracket reset.
If they want to stay true to the scene, they should keep a bracket reset, that's for sure.
Okay, and we should also be really happy that people are still playing Street Fighter V.
Yeah, and you know, there'll be more to talk about, but let's bring it back to Norris.
Yeah, for sure. And also, Rocket League is going to be a big part of this. It's going to be 2016 teams that are going to be the most competitive countries in Rocket League in the world. They're going to be competing over a number of weeks. The last qualifier is going to be taking place in Katowice, Poland, which we now know is like a hub for esports. So like everything happens in Katowice when it comes to the European scene. And we know Rocket League is huge in Europe. I think these are two very, very cool esports that are going to be featured heavily in the esports scene at the Olympics. And I think you're absolutely right that this is a beginning to sort of thinking about the question of can esports be an Olympic event and which games they would be thinking about too. Because I think it does become a little difficult for something like Call of Duty, CSGO, and other sort of gunplay based esports. I think something like Street Fighter and Rocket League play a lot more into the hands of the Olympics, as they already have combat sports and they already have soccer, which Rocket League is just car soccer.
And so the games are easier to follow too.
Oh yeah,
which lends help for a TV viewing experience.
Exactly. And lastly, we're going to touch on Ivy League schools getting involved in the esports scene. We have Cornell opening up an esports arena. Now, they're part of the Ivy Esports Conference that includes a number of schools, Brown, Columbia, now Cornell, Dartmouth. It's really cool. So, guys, what do you think about, you know, the Ivy League now being involved in the esports scene?
So it's one thing to have, like, big division schools like the Ohio State.
Stop it.
You know, Ivy League schools, they have this prestige. They have this reputation of being the top league schools in terms of intellectuals, in terms of power. I don't want to say it underway, but now to see them embracing esports, it's really cool, personally.
Yeah, and it looks like it's just that time of the year for building arenas, right?
Yeah.
First Ohio State, and now Cornell. But what I think is kind of cool about the Ivy Esports League, or the conference specifically, is that a lot of parents are like, oh, my boy got into Harvard because he didn't waste his time playing video games. All he did was study. So now that we have a conference full of like those kind of kids, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a really cool thing for the scene overall.
And I tend to agree, but that's going to be it for that. We're going to be right back with more Checkpoint XP on campus, your source for esports at the college level. And if you are at Ivy League school and you're participating in esports, let us know, because we want to hear about how it's going with all the big brains in the Ivy Leagues to see if you guys are actually any smarter than the rest of us actually who went to brain. State school.
Yeah, totally big brain.
So we'll be right back with more Checkpoint XP on campus coming up. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. And don't forget, if you're in an esports club or team or anywhere around the universities of America, we want to hear from you. We want to know what's going on at your college, and you could be a part of the show. Head on over to checkpointxp.com where you can submit your clips, stories, or maybe even you just got a buddy that's awesome at League of Legends or something like that. That's how we can begin to help you let the esports scene in your school grow. So don't forget, checkpointxp.com, and head on over to that on-campus tab. Now, Jacob is our main man in the collegiate Overwatch scene. He's going to let us know what's going on in the varsity series, and we're going to highlight a couple teams that could be making some noise in the upcoming season.
Teach us, Professor.
Yeah, no kidding. I really should have a degree for it at this point. So since we last talked about it, all the participant info came out, and so there's going to be 128 teams. So I saw that, and I was like, I should probably figure out who's worth watching here. So what I did is that I looked at the top 8 teams of the varsity series last time.
Okay.
And 6 of them are participating, so we're going to talk about 3 of them in this week, and then next week we'll talk about the other 3.
And so these are the ones you feel like we need to follow.
Yeah. Okay. And then for the overall championship series, the team that won it all was Harrisburg first.
The noted Harrisburg, who recently won a Tempest Award for the best college esports program.
Oh, and I think they're going to live up to that still. So first place was Harrisburg, second place was Utah, third place was Maryville.
Okay.
So I looked at the roster differences between the championship series and varsity series and what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the big standout for Harrisburg for me is that the entire team's still there, all the players.
So they're all stars, so they're still
all
there.
The championship team roster is still there.
Oof.
And they've added more people. So now they've expanded from 9 people to 12 people. So they have their championship team plus more people.
A deeper bench. Holy moly.
Right. And then for Utah, 7 of the same core players are there. But instead of 10 members, they have 11. So still, like, a Overwatch match amount of people are still there. But they've added a little bit more.
And then, tell about Maryville.
And then for Maryville, they're down 3 people, but they're still a team of 9 and 6 core players are being there. So what I think is what's important for all 3 of these teams is that the winning team for all of them is still there.
Yeah.
Like at bare minimum, because it's a 6v6 game, they could still fill a whole team of people that already competed. And I really do think that Harrisburg is going to be the one that sticks out, that stays on top.
I feel so too, because Harrisburg, that's the only sports program they have at that school. So they got all the support of not just the staff, but the students as well.
Right, and then
here's a question that I have for you though, Jacob, is that of the players who are not returning at Maryville, do we have any information on who's not returning to Maryville?
Yes, so there's no Snooze, Axel, or Twistan, and on Testbed they don't say what role they play, so I don't know if it'll be like going from goats to 2-2-2, which that might, maybe it's like the Titans for Harrisburg, maybe. Now that it's no longer goats, maybe they're not as potent,
no,
which is very
not.
Possible. And in the semis of the tournament for the overall championship, Maryville did take Harrisburg to a game 5, to where Harrisburg did obviously win.
Yeah.
So that could put Maryville in a revenge game situation, and I love revenge games.
Everyone loves a good, like, I'm going to come from behind, I'm going to get my revenge from last year.
Right. So I think that might give Maryville just like a little advantage in that specific matchup. But when it comes to all the schools, I think that Utah and Maryville are going to have it all together, but these new players that they picked up might just be game changers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think any of these teams could topple Harrisburg, but when you have your entire team there,
it's going to be tough. It's like trying to take down the Patriots, you know?
Right, but if you want to watch, which I think you should, you want to watch Harrisburg, University of Utah, or Maryville, is what I think.
And next week, we're going to have the next three teams that you feel like you should watch out for.
Yes, sir.
All right, Norris, back to you.
All right, that's going to be it for the Overwatch Varsity Series. But again, we want to hear from you. If you are at any of these schools, if you're a follower of Harrisburg or Utah or Maryville, let us know just how much that Overwatch team means to you and what's going on campus with those scenes. But we're going to be back with more Checkpoint XP on campus, where we're going to be talking about Call of Duty and Optic Gaming and what's going on with that scene. And on top of that, we're going to be talking about Nike and their absolutely ridiculous League of Legends jersey. More coming on that for Checkpoint XP on campus. Hey, what's going on? And welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for esports at the college level. We are going to talk a little bit about the Call of Duty pro scene, as well as what's going on with Optic Gaming. And for that, we're going to bring in our managing editor and Call of Duty expert, Evan Kelly. He's joining us at the desk at UNLV. Evan, what's going on, man? What is going on with this Call of Duty scene with Optic? Because I can't figure out what's going on, man.
It's blowing up, man. It's blowing up. The man who built the house, man, Optic Hex, is gone. He's headed over to NRG Gaming now. The tumultuous ownership saga with Optic Gaming is now over, going from Infinite to Immortals. In between, with Hector trying to buy back the company and failing to do so, It's really, you know, we're closing the chapter on this, turning to a new page now, and everyone's finally getting to move on. The green wall, per se, has been in purgatory for a long while, trying to figure out what the future of this organization is going to be, especially, you know, how it's going to affect not only Call of Duty, because Optic has, you know, they have branches in all kinds of games. Mm-hmm. They have a league spot. They now are going forward are going to have a spot in the Call of Duty League, being the LA franchise.
Yeah, LA team, yeah.
It's crazy. Just seeing, you know, one of the stalwarts of esports and Call of Duty especially, just moving on and, you know, kind of entering a new phase. It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what the fallout is. Who's going to follow Hex to NRG? How is Optic going to, you know, approach this new era where kind of, you know, they are lacking in, you know, what made them in the beginning. So right. I'm very, very interested to see what's going on here.
How long has this saga been going on?
It's been tumultuous in the sense that, like, we've been, you know, fighting over the ownership of Optic Gaming for about 5 years now. It's been, you know, Hex took some investment early on around 2015-16 from Infinite Esports, and now, you know, once things started to change, they started to, you know, branch out into other games, and Hex started to get less and less control, and I feel like they were taking Optic into a different direction. Things just became more and more tumultuous, and, you know, the thing that was at the base of it all, the thing that was consistent the entire time, was Call of Duty, and now it looks like, you know, even that we're moving on from, because, you know, they have a lot of these guys who have been consistently winning, you know, championships, majors, tournaments for years, and now they're looking to move on too, and it's curious to see, you know, guys like Crimsix, guys like Scum, are they going to follow Hex over to, mm-hmm. you know, Chicago, the Chicago Call of Duty League spot that NRG has? Are they going to follow him over there back to essentially the roots of, you know, where, you know, Optic started and, you know, where Call of Duty kind of started to grow as a result?
And so you really think we're going to be able to just rest in peace now? Like, it's just going to be a happy LA family and life's good?
I don't think that green wall is going to keep supporting Optic if Hex isn't there. It's really, like, he is that brand. Like, he kind of built it from the ground up. He created the company, and he's been involved. He's been, you know, at the forefront. He's been, you know, as transparent as he possibly can be with these fans, and I think, you know, they're more loyal to Hex overall than they are to, you know, that Optic Gaming logo. So I think if anything, if these Greenwall fans are going to choose, I think they're going to choose Hex.
Okay.
Now, I have a quick question for you, Kevin. Is this something that you think could, you know, be a hindrance to the Call of Duty League moving forward? Do you think having this story that is played out right at the cusp of franchising, right at the cusp of this massive growth that Call of Duty is trying to do, do you think that this is something that could impact that league negatively and cause people to think twice about it?
Oh, absolutely not. I think this is actually gold for the Call of Duty League. We have, you know, we're storylines run sports right now. Mm-hmm. I think everyone cares about that deeper narrative. And I feel like if you have this kind of, you know, optics kind of been, if I'm talking about narratives, optics kind of been consumed by, you know, a greater corporate entity and, you know, the original, you know, the iconoclasts have been, mm-hmm. you know, pushed out and they're making their own. Their own way now. So it's interesting to see how those two teams will clash. And what do you think, Norris?
I definitely think that it gives certain people that narrative, but I also think that it's going to give folks a moment of pause. I do think that seeing the investment got people really excited, but I do think that there are a lot of questions around the league, and I think that this is one of them, considering how much is going on with Optic Gaming. We also know 100 Thieves is now not involved in the Call of Duty League as Huge. Well, but the expansion is very heartening, so I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I feel like the Call of Duty League has a lot of trouble in Paradise, and I think a story like this is a good thing to raise some interest.
All right.
Yeah, but that's going to be it, talking about the Call of Duty League and the saga with Optic Gaming. Are you an Optic Gaming fan? Are you interested to see what Immortals is now going to do with it? Or are you a Hex fan that just will follow him wherever he goes? Let us know via social media, Checkpoint XP on Twitter, on Facebook, and _XP on Instagram. But we're going to have more Checkpoint XP on campus coming up, where we are going to break down the Overwatch League Grand Final. Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. I'm your host, Norris Howard. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Overwatch League Grand Finals in just a moment. But don't forget, if you are on a college campus and you want the stories of your esports team told, don't forget to slide over to checkpointxp.com, where we got all types of nice, brilliant, pretty forms for you to fill out and let us know what is going on your campus. And you can be a part of the show. We can feature you not just as a player, but also as a contributor to Checkpoint XP on campus. But we're going to toss it back to the guys at the UNLV studios, and they're going to talk a little bit about the Overwatch League Grand Finals, which will now be featuring the Vancouver Titans and the San Francisco Shock.
First, can somebody pick up that phone? Because I'm pretty sure I called it. San Fran versus Vancouver in the Overwatch League Finals. What did I say? What did I say?
I think the story that everyone wants to talk about is how Zed's going to be performing there. No. this is the match that everyone does want to see. I am very excited. But the playoffs, even leading up to this final game, has been ridiculous.
Oh, man.
Well, especially with San Fran going to the loser's bracket, we were all pretty confident that they were going to make it back up.
Yep.
But Atlanta, bodied by Hangzhou, incredible. And then NYXL, I don't think they actually choked. You know what? I don't like NYXL, but I'll give them some credit. If you take the Titans,
they showed up.
If you take the Titans to a game seven,
yeah.
I don't think at that point it's a choke. I just think the Titans were a better team.
Yeah.
And I do think that I'm still pretty confident the Shock's going to beat the Titans just from the depth of the roster. Because every now and again they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we have Striker. We forgot too.
How many games?
I'm pretty sure it's just a first to four.
No, I mean, like, you think they're going to take him in, like, five games?
I will be shocked if it doesn't go to a game seven.
Okay.
Because the finals last year, it was just, London was just destroying everyone. It was a 4-0, everyone goes home.
Mm-hmm.
But Vancouver, they're still not as strong as they used to be. Back when it was GOATs, they were at their peak.
I'm going to say it right here, guys. You heard it from Daniel. Shock in five.
Shock in five. Yeah, I think for Shock, where it's going to come from is going to be the depth of the roster.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure that's going to be the number one thing.
I think they have a stronger depth than Vancouver.
Yeah, do you have any knee-jerk reactions to this matchup, Norris?
You know what? I think you guys are underplaying just how strong Vancouver has been throughout the entire season. I understand the roster depth that San Francisco has, and I agree that I think it will be going a full seven games, to be perfectly honest. But I think that Vancouver is going to have just enough to be put ahead, because we've seen that when San Francisco gets down, they can be beaten. But when we've seen Vancouver in the same sort of situations where it's a very close match, evenly matched up, that they're able to pull out the extra mile. I think if the Shot don't get out to a very early lead, I think if they don't go out to a 2-0 lead or a 3-0 lead, I think that the Shock will be in a lot of trouble, because from what I saw against Atlanta is a team that was very strong, a team that knew that they were better than their opponents, and the problem was they behaved like they were better than their opponents instead of just going out and doing the job. They got a little bit arrogant, and I think they may be going into this matchup a little bit arrogant too.
Yeah, I think kind of the main difference between the two teams is that when Vancouver pulls out someone else, it's just like, I guess we'll pull out Stitch. Like, why not? But for the Shock, usually it's like, this guy is good at X, Y, and Z, exactly. So you're going to pull him out for X, Y, and Z. And I think the Titans, they are kind of fooled themselves. I think they think that they are the best. And I think that in next season they'll be even better, because in the offseason they'll have time to adjust to the current meta. But I think since the meta changed during the season, I think that's going to hurt them in the long run.
Yeah, because, again, you don't count out someone who's coming in from Loser's Bracket because they want it more.
I do think San Fran would want it more, as they did have a really uneventful first season. And so now this is their time.
I disagree with you guys so
Shocker,
much. Man.
He disagrees with us.
I disagree with you guys so much. I think that the Vancouver Titans are going to do it. They're going to pull away with it. And they're going to be the team to beat straight up. They're going to be the guys that stand at the top of the hill because they are runaway. Okay. They want the perfect.
Norris, how many games?
He's seven. Seven, yeah.
Seven games? Okay. All right,
seven games, and the Titans win it all.
I'm pretty confident that this will be a significantly better series than the finals last year.
Okay.
All right, well, that's going to be it from these guys at the UNLV studio on that topic. But, of course, we want to hear from everybody out there watching, everybody in the chat, everybody participating. We want to know just how much do you believe in the San Francisco Shot? Can Sinatra, the MVP, the Doomfist extraordinaire, he's extraordinary at everything. He can play everywhere. But do you believe in them? Or do you believe in the Vancouver Titans? Let us know. But we're going to have more coming up for Checkpoint XP on campus. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one source for collegiate esports. And we talk a little bit about the pro scene, but at the end of the show, we like to have a little fun and talk about something a little lighter that's not, you know, violence or millions of dollars on the line. But we will talk about some really ugly jerseys. We're going to talk about Nike and their partnership with the LPL, that is the Chinese branch of the Pro League of Legends scene. And these were released in an article by Kotaku. It is literally titled Nike's New League of Legends Gear Sucks. Okay. And looking at the images, they are not off base, guys. This gear is not what I expect from Nike at all. I'm a Nike head. I grew up in the 90s. Okay. Everything was about Nike. If you didn't have Nike on, you got beat up. It was the type of stuff that you wanted to have. And they put out this. What is this?
Jacob, please tell me what you think.
As the person who certifies what is fetch and what is not, this is not it. I have come back on it a little bit because I've looked at it a couple times since our meeting. And some of them are not bad, but they all look the exact same, right? And like when you have jerseys, it's like, I'm not going to a private middle school. I don't need this little logo on the top and this other little logo here and some V across my chest. And they all have the V. Some of them have like white sleeves and like a red looking vest. The buttons on it, not good. And I think some of them, I can see like two where it's like, sure, maybe I'd wear this. And it's like a really nice material. But for the rest of them, I don't really get it. Do you agree with my fetch take?
Like Norris, I love Nike. 90% of my shoes are from Nike right now. I was looking at these last night, and I thought came to mind, like, what if I wore these? And I'll be honest, guys, I got a little sick. These are some of the worst-looking jerseys. And I was trying to be optimistic, but no, I cannot be optimistic about these jerseys. They are terrible. I don't know what Nike's
thinking. No, they're really bad. And I think part of what makes them really bad is a jersey is supposed to be a show of individuality of the team. It's supposed to be a representation of that squad. The colors are supposed to pop. It's supposed to be, you know, when you wear it, you're supposed to have pride. Like, if I see, I feel like if I see anybody wearing these jerseys, like a Royal Never Give Up jersey, I just feel like, off the rip, like I have to fight you. Like, that's what I feel like. Like, they're that bad. They're such a bad taste that I feel like you should be ostracized from the entire esports community by even thinking about buying.
Well, I think, like, if you look at, like, the Overwatch League alternate jerseys, they are unnecessarily cool. They're so sick. Or, like, the Cloud9 jersey, how, like, you know, it's like,
those are iconic.
It's here and there, and, like, it wraps around. Yeah, like, they stand out, and the point is to stand out. This really does look like you're just going to school.
If this looks like they had one template and just plugged them for each team, that's all it was.
Yeah, at least for like football jerseys and stuff, every now and again they'll find something cool. They'll do something different on the sleeve, you know, something. The only variety really in these jerseys is what they put inside of the V. And the V is tacky as all get out.
It doesn't look great.
I really don't understand. Like, make it an X. Make it a rhombus for all I care. But just like this V, I don't understand the point.
And the thing is, like, they'll still wear it because it's still jerseys right in my Nike. You can't just say no to that.
Right.
That is so disappointing. And I just can't believe that Nike will put something out like this. I don't know if this one was an agreement from the LPL that there has to be some sort of uniformity to all the jerseys.
Who signed off on that?
But it feels like that they were very constrained, and to me, this is just not the wave. These jerseys are not the wave. But that's going to be all from Checkpoint XP on campus. I want to thank all the hard work from the people out at UNLV, including our anchors. That's Daniel Agbuya, Jacob Brothers, lead production work from Ethan Schneider, managing editor Kevin Kelly, Leslie Fitzsimmons, Jennifer Ream, and Ben Morse from the UNLV faculty. Also, all of our very hardworking crew here at the Detroit studio, that's producers Joe Sloan, Pat Callahan, and audio production help from Nate Bender. And of course, all of you who watch us, who want to participate in the collegiate esports space, we thank you for watching and for listening, because you can find the podcast now. Everywhere you find podcasts, that's going to be Checkpoint XP on campus, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll be back next week with more Checkpoint XP on campus. See you later.
Love you.